Off the Ball Breakfast.
I have not seen a minute of this tournament.
That's what the cool kids say these days.
Genuinely haven't.
Everyone's saying that. I haven't seen a second of it.
It's not a thing. It hasn't even...
Live every weekday morning from 7:30 on your smart speaker. Just ask Alexa to play OTB Sports Radio.
Now then, someone we've wanted to catch up with for a while is Georgia Drummy. She's played in all of the junior Grand Slams in tennis, made the quarterfinals of the junior doubles at Wimbledon, and I'm happy to say she's with us now in studio. Georgia, thanks for coming in. How are you keeping?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me.
Wimbledon's obviously on at the moment. We've all been watching on television. You were over there last week, right?
Yeah, I was there last Monday for the first round matches, so I got to see a good few upsets.
Yes.
But it was really good tennis.
Which matches were you at?
I was at the Holger Rune match and then Berrettini. So I was like, I watched both sets where they won and then I left and both of them seemed to lose their matches. So I was like, maybe that's their good luck charm.
Is this for you an annual trip, even since you've been away from playing the game?
Yeah, I couldn't go last year because I underwent surgery, but the year prior to that I went. I just love watching tennis and especially Wimbledon being so close to home. It's such an easy short trip to go to.
But your only involvement with the game at the moment is purely as a spectator, a little bit of distance from the actual playing, obviously, because of the injury.
Yeah, so I sustained a back injury, which meant that I couldn't play tennis professionally. But I will be looking to get back involved in tennis once I fully recover.
Not to jump straight into the negative part here, but when did the injury occur?
So it's just something I've kind of dealt with for a good few years. It kind of basically progressed my last couple of years of college, especially like 2021 onwards. I really struggled. I was kind of having to underarm serve and stuff to get through some college matches. So I kind of took some of the summers a bit off to try and play less tennis and see how that would do. And then I kind of spoke to a surgeon and he basically said, like, I don't think I'd be able to continue with how my back is at the moment. And so I stopped playing right after college in 2023, tried to live a normal life, and then I realized I required surgery. But the only good thing is now then I'll be able to play tennis again once I have like completed all my recovery, but I can't play at a very high level.
Okay, let's rewind here a little bit and give a little bit of the backstory. I think actually a good place to start is the last time you were sitting in that chair, 2019, around the summer of 2019, you just won your first professional title.
Yeah.
Around that point. I'm not sure how you started in Vanderbilt University at that point, but certainly you were on the way there. Life was going, as a tennis player, very, very encouragingly at that point.
Yeah, no. I'd played all the junior slams in 2018 and I went to college in 2019. And I just in that summer, after my first semester of college, I played a few pro tournaments. I think I played like three and I ended up winning two out of the three. So it was a good summer.
Yeah.
So I kind of was like, you know, during the year, I'd be at college kind of practicing and playing a lot of tournaments that way. And then my summers would be dedicated to trying to play professional tennis because at the end of the day, it was always very important to me to have that backup of having good education just in case any injury did come up.
How far flung were all the destinations of that summer touring?
In fairness, that summer I took it easy. I only stayed in Europe. I didn't want to go too far, especially because I was living in the US. I wanted to be a bit closer to home. So that one was all Europe, but I obviously had traveled all around the world, like especially to Australia in 2015 for my first junior slam. So that was exciting.
The United States had been home for a while at that point. You go to the Everett Academy in Florida right after your junior cert, right?
Yeah, so I was looking at basically a couple of academies to see how I could basically progress my tennis game because I felt I'd played a lot of tennis at home in Ireland, but I wasn't, you know, the next step was definitely to have a bit more competitive players to train with. And then again, you know, training in the heat and humidity was going to be another test. I kind of moved to the US. I was fortunate to gain a scholarship. I went to Everett Tennis Academy. I trained there for 2.5 years and I got to work with some really great coaches.
What do you remember about that time before you go to Florida, the decision-making progress and also the realization that something very real was on the line for you? It feels daunting in one way, but on the other way, the fact that the opportunity was there for you must have been hugely encouraging and exciting.
Yeah, I think I kind of had felt like I'd played my first junior slam at 15 and I was trying to think of like I'd won and it was Fitzwilliam, which was the national tournament for us when I was 15 for like under 18s and stuff like that. So I kind of felt like I had done what I could do to get to the best possible level here. So I felt if I really wanted to take myself serious and like continue to play tennis, that would just mean that I would have to get better training and be around better players. But
you're the best junior in Ireland. And then you want to become the best junior in Europe. You want to become the best junior in the world. And it's something we might chat about a little bit later on here, is that the opportunities to be able to elevate yourself to that level, they just aren't here in this country. It's simple as that, right?
Yeah, I mean, when I was growing up, there wasn't, you know, I think the only surface that was really here was Savannah. And then there are a couple of tennis centers that had indoor hard. But they are doing a lot better job now. They are putting in artificial clay courts in a lot of tennis clubs. So at least, you know, these are similar enough to actual clay courts.
Okay.
Which will definitely, I think, we'll see a rise in like tennis players hopefully in the future. But yeah, when I was growing up, it's a different game style playing on the Savannah. It's very fast, slow balls. Whereas you go out to play tournaments, none of them are on Savannah when you play international. So you're playing on outdoor hards or you're playing on clay, especially like juniors. Obviously in the slams and in professional tournaments, there'll be a few clay court, grass courts, but you know, most of the year you're not playing on grass, which obviously we have. So I think it's definitely something that they are working on with building more courts in Ireland that are similar to tournaments that you will be playing abroad.
Oh, that sounds pretty encouraging. For you at that point, mm-hmm. how alien was playing clay day in, day out? Like, I'm sure you'd played tournaments at that point, but actually becoming really familiar with it.
Yeah, I mean, like, it was difficult because I tried to go to the tournament a few days earlier to actually practice on clay, like proper clay. But, you know, there's only so much training. I wasn't the best at moving on clay, and you could see that because I wasn't growing up on it or I wasn't really training on it. So it then obviously it would affect my confidence and everything, but you know, I kind of had to just go into the tournament being like, this is my game, and kind of stick to how I play and like not basically change it for the surface that I'm on. But yeah, I think as well, like, same thing when it comes to the hard court, we don't have outdoor hard courts that are the surface for like Australian Open or US Open. Like, sometimes we have like a different sort of hard court. So again, it plays differently to the sort of course that you will be playing for tournaments abroad.
How hands-on was Chris Evert at the Chris Evert Academy?
Yeah, no, she was great. I worked with her a few times, more with her brother, who actually had coached her, which was great. But no, I had more of a personal coach, Mandy Wilson, who helped me a lot to develop as a player, and she kind of took me under her wing, and she was the one that would work hands-on with me.
What are the dynamics like at that moment? Like, it feels that when Conor Nyland writes his book last year, we all of a sudden have a whole set of reference points for it, and I think a lot of us probably had no idea about what the academy structures are like in a place like Florida. And certainly what I got from Conor's experience is that it's multi-layered, let's say. Even if you're one of the most gifted individuals in the world, once you go into an academy like this, you're in amongst the best of the best, and you can still feel like there's a couple of rungs to mm-hmm. the ladder. Was that your experience as well?
Yeah, no, of course. Any sort of academy, there's going to be different tiers of players. There were some players at the Evert Tennis Academy that like kind of felt were there, but they weren't really training too hard. They weren't like, they knew they weren't going to pursue tennis. And then you had like the topper level, which I was kind of in the group, which was great. And we received definitely like a lot more attention to detail, which is kind of what I was pursuing. And that's when I was looking at a couple of academies. I was trying to find one that, you know, would suit me. I didn't want to go to a big one like IMG and just like fall into a crowd. I felt like Evert had a small enough group of players at a high level that they could then really focus on my game.
Okay, right. And were you aware of the differences between an Evert and say an IMG at that point, or was that just a stroke of luck?
I was aware, and so I visited a couple of academies as well right before I went, because I wanted to kind of see what it was like. So yeah, I kind of wanted to just make sure I'd been warned from other people, you know, that's how academies can go.
How did you find the move initially?
Yeah, it was a bit difficult at first, especially when it comes to food.
Yeah.
I did miss a lot of the Irish food, but no, I kind of had always been traveling for tournaments my whole life since the age of, I think my first one was like under 10s. I traveled to France and stuff like that. So I'd always been on the road,
right.
But obviously I'd be going away for 3 weeks and then coming home. So it was a different sort of scenario where now you're not coming home until twice a year. But luckily, like, my parents would make the trips, try to come like once or twice a year to see me as well. But I think as well, I just kind of wanted to focus. I knew tennis was something that I had a passion. I wanted to give it everything I had.
Did your parents have a master plan for you?
No, well, I had two older sisters that played tennis. Okay. They played in Ireland, and then my middle sister, she played a few ITFs and stuff like that. So, like, I think that definitely helped them to see kind of what levels I needed to get at, because, like, you know, under 12s, I started playing like tennis Europes, and then under 14s, you have the under 14 tennis Europes, and then you go into the ITF. So they kind of knew what the stepping stones would be for me. And then obviously at ITF, then you'd go into a professional tournament. So I felt like I always kind of had set goals of what kind of rankings I wanted to do, to see what sort of tournaments I could play then in the future.
Because it feels that even in during your upbringing, I know you've mentioned it's changed now, there aren't, you know, a whole pile of resources in terms of availabilities of different courses or different courts and surfaces. It does feel there's also a lack of knowledge with regards to players who haven't made it to the very top level, and therefore that information isn't shared amongst your peers, and it becomes a challenge on top of a challenge. I guess it kind of sounds like you had overcome that, and your family felt that the master plan, to use that phrase again, was kind of working at that point, that everything that you could possibly do to try and put yourself in the mix to become a professional tennis player and a successful one at that, had kind of all fallen into place.
Yeah, like, they also, we would have talked to a few of the other players who had tried to go professional or who played professional tennis. Like, I know my parents would have talked to, like, Amy Botel to see, like, how it was she found training in Ireland, or even, like, Sam Barry and Connor in Ireland as well. Like, we would have kind of asked around, because, yeah, like, it's a small group of people that are trying to play coming out of a small country. So I think it's just more figuring out what has worked and what hasn't worked for other people.
So Everett Academy finishes, and you go straight to university from that point then?
Yeah, so I graduated high school in 2018, December, and January 2019, I was in Nashville in Vanderbilt. So yeah, I did that, and I was there for like a year and a half, basically, until COVID hit in March 2020.
Okay.
And then I had to come home. I was home for the 5 months in lockdown. So it was a bit of a difficult time, like not being able to train and stuff like that. But I was trying to still, I was still in touch with coaches to try to work on my at least fitness aspect to keep that up. And then I went back to college and I transferred, and I went to Duke University for my remainder 3 years of college.
So when lockdown happens, are your peers on the varsity team in Vanderbilt training every day on the court?
Yeah, so like most of them were Americans, so they didn't have any sort of lockdown, so they were all practicing.
On campus?
Not on campus, right. We weren't allowed to be on campus, but say it obviously as well, it differed with each state that they lived in, what the COVID restrictions were, but most of them were just playing the whole time, didn't have to really give up anything, you know.
That must have been pretty significant. Maybe we didn't know how long it was going to last at the time, but certainly in hindsight, that's a really crucial point of your career where your access gets limited.
Yeah, no, exactly. Like, that's why I was trying to at least stay somewhat physically fit. But yeah, no, it was a difficult time. I think, you know, when I went back to college that fall semester and trying to play some fall tournaments, it took time to get used to not only practicing, but getting into that mindset of playing tournaments again, because I hadn't ever really taken a break from tournaments that long. I'd only ever, like, you know, every month I was playing tournaments, if not. And like in college tennis, you play 5 months straight of matches every weekend. So it was kind of the first time where I was like, whoa, I'm trying to get back into that mindset.
Yeah, I can imagine. So at this point, certainly in 2018, 2019, in the world junior rankings, you'd reached top 40 at that point, top 30 potentially. At what stage do you go back at post-COVID? Is your junior career then over?
Yeah, right. So my junior career is over, but like that's when the previous summer I'd played those two or three professional tournaments, and okay. I'd gained a bit of a ranking. But yeah, obviously I think they put like a secured ranking over it, because no one could really play, or like if people could play, it wasn't like everyone could. So they knew that like you could secure your ranking. But then, 2021 summer was when I would have to defend all those points from those tournaments I would have won in 2019. But I think I only played one tournament and my back was at me. So I kind of had to stop with that. I played one tournament, yeah.
Was that the first time that you'd experienced back issues at that point?
No, I'd experienced, I think, I retired from a match in 2018 December. But it was kind of experienced back pain like every couple of months. It wasn't too bad. But then by the time it was like in college, I was experiencing it every match.
So it's a slow ramping up where the pain is getting more significant. The periods of time that you're suffering the pain are getting longer as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
At what stage do you start to get worried about it?
I think fairly on, fairly quickly, I was kind of, you know, seeing people and seeing what it was like. And then it kind of just basically, we would do x-rays and it would just progress. So there wasn't really anything I could do. I was trying to keep myself fit and like doing certain things. Like it was very important to keep my core strong. I did find that it did help, but at the end of the day, it was just sometimes your body tells you can't do it.
So the x-rays were showing up issues, and every time you go back, what sort of things was it? Like, obviously it wasn't fractures that we're talking here, but
no, I just I was born with something with my back. Okay. So then I was just basically just making sure that it was going to be okay, but it wasn't going in the right direction.
So you're trying to get back on track with regards to your athletic career at this point, representing Duke, I presume?
Yeah.
And your body is fighting against you at this point. How big a challenge was that when you started to realise how significant this was going to be?
It was definitely a big challenge. I talked a lot with my coaches. I had a great team beside me in terms of not only the players I was playing with, but I would see the physio every kind of day after practice. They would work a lot on me to kind of keep me fit and ready. And then I would have massages twice weekly to try to keep my back loose. So I've really had the best in terms of had all the facilities to try to help it get better, but couldn't.
And when you go back to Duke, the dream is obviously still very much to become a full-time professional tennis player. It's kind of a brutal question to ask, but at what point do you start to realise that that might be in danger?
I think it was more kind of 2023, like
okay,
around
it's a few
that
years.
Sort of. Yeah, yeah. Like I kind of, it wasn't as bad in 2021. Like I was experiencing pain, but it kind of, you know, I could get through it. It wasn't every match, but by the time it was 2023, I really did struggle a lot.
The pain was just off the charts.
Yeah.
And then what happens? It's that's when you have to go for surgery, is it?
Yeah. So I come home having graduated college in May. And I kind of was like, had spoken to people about my back and they were kind of saying, you know, I think since you're not going to be able to play professional tennis, why don't we just see how your back feels without playing tennis? See, will it get better? And so I took the year of just working and like doing my own fitness. I see like a back specialist the whole time. And I was getting to the point that I just was really struggling with day-to-day activities. And so I thought the best move would be to have surgery. So yeah, and then I did, and now I'm just recovering and doing a lot of physio and getting back into it.
And how are you now?
I'm doing well. No, it is going well. Have some great people to help me get through it, so no, I'm happy.
And like, that is the most important thing, obviously, your quality of life for many, many more decades obviously outdoes any sort of career, but that doesn't mean that the career isn't unbelievably important, and it doesn't mean that you weren't working towards this thing for a couple of decades of your life prior to that. How did you deal with that element of disappointment? And even that phrase that you said there, since you're not going to be able to play professional tennis, we got to look at other options. That feels brutal. Like,
yeah.
And I'm sure there might have been a few brutal conversations that you endured.
Yeah, no, it was definitely a very difficult time for me. Just kind of, you know, obviously I had always dreamt of playing professional tennis, and I kind of was like, even if, you know, it is hard to believe as an Irish tennis player that you can make it as a professional player, but I was kind of saying like, at least I'd give it my best go, whereas I kind of felt like it was a hard time because it was my body rejecting me rather than me being not good enough, or just like to at least test to see if I could have been good enough to get to certain tournaments. But yeah, no, I think it was just good having my family and friends around me, and everyone, coaches who have all helped me throughout my years. I talk to them a lot to try to get through it. And then, like, I am now, like, doing a different career, trying to do a professional career at work. I'm working at KPMG at the moment in deal advisory, and I'm enjoying it at the moment. And I definitely, but I do see myself in the future getting back involved in tennis. I really would like to, hopefully. And if next year or whenever my body will allow it, I'll definitely will be back on the court.
In a coaching capacity or?
I haven't quite thought how far, like see what kind of how my body will respond to it. But yeah. I'd love to like at least coach for sure or help just Irish tennis players in general.
How big a part of your identity was wrapped up in tennis at that point and having to divorce yourself from being the tennis player? I wonder how big a process was that?
Yeah, no, I honestly, I hadn't thought of what sort of work I wanted to do. I was kind of thinking, you know, I'll give professional tennis a few years and then I'll think about what exactly I want to do with life. So it was kind of a big shock. I never expected, like, I kind of obviously knew I was always going to have struggle with the pain, but I didn't think it would progress how it did. But yeah, again, like, just it was all about getting through it with the people around me.
Yeah. In terms of the people that helped you through it, was it your parents? Was it your coaches? Who were the most important people around you at that point to pull you through?
I can't say a specific person because I feel like all of them helped in different aspects. It was nice as well. You know, it was also a difficult time because I'd lived in the US for 7 years and I was coming home, you know, kind of as though a new person, not having tennis and not being living there, and all my friends were kind of like further away. But I did have obviously still some Irish friends, which have really been great for me. I also have a friend that moved from the US to Ireland at the same time. So it's been nice. And I can't say like a specific person because they've all been great.
It also is a different mindset, isn't it? Trying to actually get yourself back to a level of being healthy and like your quality of life being good and the back not being a pain. Like I don't know, at the start, maybe the sporting thing becomes more, I don't know, does it lessen in importance, the idea that the sporting career might be nearing its end game because there is something more important out there?
Yeah, I mean, like, as you said earlier, I feel like when I had the injury and everything, I was kind of like, you know, I need to focus about my health in the future and not just being an athlete. So I definitely think, you know, I needed to really think about what it is I want to do outside of that.
Yeah. Being back at Wimbledon last week brings back memories of playing in the junior slams, I suspect.
Yeah, no, it did. It was some great memories. Like, definitely was looking at the court that I played on and looked at it. But, you know, I really do enjoy just watching tennis and seeing everyone. Even watching some of the fellow college athletes like Emma Navarro and Ben Shelton all play. Like, I played Emma when I was in college and then Diana Schneider. There's a good few players that are doing really well at the moment.
What's the setup for a junior slam in Wimbledon? Is it kind of access all areas? You're treated like one of the seniors?
Yeah, so it just depends on what tournament. They all kind of had different access. So for Wimbledon, I had access to the locker room that was for all the main players that were outside, I think, the seeds. So none of the seeds were in our locker room, but it would be all the non-seeds would be in the same locker room as the juniors. And then we would have to the same restaurants and everything. And then you'd go in the underground tunnel, so it'd be actually a great time to see everyone.
Yeah, and I can imagine for a junior, that's an unbelievably motivating thing. You're seeing the best of the best in a very normal habitat. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure if you're picking up nuggets or anything like that, but just the mere image of that must be a fairly powerful thing as an underage player.
Yeah, no, definitely. It was very exciting to see all the pro tennis players like right in front of your face and you'd be on the same practice courts next to them. I remember I told my coach, could you let me know if you ever see Rafa Nadal? Because he was always my favorite tennis player and I ran out, got a picture with him. So it was kind of cool just being around that environment. It kind of felt like surreal just being a junior tennis player and being amongst some of the best in the world.
So it kind of feels as if tennis in your life is in a dormant place. It's not over. Tennis and Georgia Drummy are not divorced. This thing could be back on at some stage in the future. And I kind of get the sense that that's comforting, or else you've compartmentalized everything here to the point where it just doesn't come across in how you speak about your career.
Yeah, no, I definitely want to be involved in tennis again. Like, it's been part of my life since I was like 4 years of age when I started playing tennis, and like my whole family growing up as well. I've always loved for the game, so I don't want that to end. And I just know there's opportunities in the future that will come up, and I just want to help anyone I can.
It does feel as well that you did everything in your power to get to a really impressive place in a global standing, and your story can actually be one of hope for a lot of other young tennis players in Ireland, that it's not impossible. You didn't have to go to extraordinary lengths to get to where you got to, but it was a piece of bad luck that your body just didn't hold up for a really tough time in your career, as opposed to it being any structure, anything structurally or anything that, you know, out of your control that maybe held you back.
Yeah, I mean, I was very fortunate to have like gotten the opportunities I did, and being able to travel the world to play. I mean, I know at the moment in UCD, they're going to be putting a facility called the Centre of Excellence, which will help younger players, any elite tennis players, to train in Ireland, which I think will be a great way, instead of having to, you know, travel, or they'll only basically be traveling for tennis tournaments instead of having to, you know, move across the world to practice full time, and they'll have access to international tennis coaches and some of the best facilities. And I think, you know, if I look back at it and I had that when I was here, I'd be like, oh, that would have been an amazing way to keep up my sort of level. But I think it's just exciting. Like, I really hope that in the future we will be having, you know, some players playing slams consistently. I think, you know, obviously the last person is Conor Nyland, so it's been a few years. So I think, you know, it's all about looking to the next generation and kind of making sure that we have the right facilities in place at the moment.
If those facilities were there in UCD when you were growing up, would you have stayed in Ireland, do you think?
I think I definitely would. I think it's important being surrounded again by like your family.
Yeah.
I think that's a huge impact. Again, like, you will have to travel for tournaments, but it is exciting, you know, in terms of they'll be having some of like the best facilities when it comes to just like training off the court. Whereas I feel like when I was obviously training, I think our national tennis center had like two or three dumbbells at the side of the court. Like, that was our fitness. And it was kind of difficult to, how can you physically progress when the kind of the tools weren't there. But I think, you know, they're coming a long way with building more clay courts. And now this facility will give an opportunity for players. I think they'll even be able to receive scholarships to train there. And, you know, I think it hopefully will attract other international players to come to Ireland just to at least, you know, train a bit.
Right. So you're optimistic about the sport here.
Yeah, no, I am. I think like we are kind of making little steps to hopefully, you know, see some progress. It will take time. I don't think, you know, it's something that will just like come up straight away, like within when it opens, that you're just going to have like players performing amazing within 2 to 3 years. I think it's going to take some time. But just knowing that they'll have like clay courts and a hard court. So I think you're just giving people the best chance that they possibly can.
Who do you fancy to win both competitions this weekend?
I'd love to see Sabalenka win women's. I think, like, obviously she's world number one, so I think it'd be lovely to see. She hasn't won Wimbledon. That would be great. And then I am a Carlos Alcaraz fan.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
So,
yeah, it's amazing. Like, I'm not sure, did you have any preference of who was going to win the women's final at Roland Garros? Because obviously Sabalenka, I mean, it would have been a great moment for her, but I think you played against Coco Gauff. So, like, I mean, maybe there's a little bit more of that actually strikes home, is there?
I honestly, I didn't really mind who was going to win. I think sometimes, you know, with tennis, it can be who's playing better that day. It's not necessarily they're going to win all the time. So I think it's just about kind of watching a great match.
Yeah, for sure. Listen, Georgia, it's great to catch up with you, and great to have you back in studio here 5 years later. It's been full of ups and downs, but no doubt that when you get back involved with the game, it's going to be huge success. So thanks, Millie, for popping in, and great to chat to you.
Perfect. Thanks so much for having me.
In case you missed this morning's Off the Ball breakfast,
we had this.
The Cork are just about viable favourites. They've beaten Tip twice, so you could be afraid that the same thing would happen again. But I'm not really, because I just think that Tip have really nothing to lose. I mean, a defeat in the All-Ireland final is not going to hold us up, really, to be honest with you.
And we also had this.
Ali McCoist was absolutely hilarious. I remember Ali goes to me, we're going to be having a fair few pints of Guinness here, so they take a while to pour. So when I want another round for the lads, I'm just going to give you a nod, all right? And I was like, yeah, no problem. So he takes his 3 pints, walks over, puts them down, turns around and nods at me. And I was like, oh, wow, this is going to be a long night.
You can catch everything from this morning's Off The Ball breakfast elsewhere on the Go Loud app and every weekday morning from 7.30.